and of course they were very anxious to have me with the organization again. But they couldn't do it because they had discharged almost two-thirds of their employees. So it was to save money to fight that conviction. They said, but if you'll lend your money privately, stay here. And I did. I stayed on. Them for about 3 years. Now, of course, there's always a click that tries to get your job. So they tried very hard to defeat me in an election. They never could. And they finally called on the president of the International League, Schlesinger, to come down, see what he could do. And they got up at a meeting and said, she must have a personal reason for staying here. We can never defeat her in an election. Now, what are we going to do? We don't want her particular clique. So I resigned. I wouldn't stand for anything like that. And it was a half a year after that when that clique was ousted, not only from the local, but from the international, because they had stolen money from the union. I used to walk a mile to save a nickel car fare. I used to go to the bank of U.S. there on Delancey Street and walk a mile from our union to there, because every nickel meant so much to the organization. Then they got into the office and they stole the money right away. But I never came back to the unions after that, until then I turned to dietetics, until I had to, no, not that, wait a minute, I'm getting twisted. After that, I worked for the Joint Distribution Committee, a big relief organization, and I worked with them for about 6.5 years until they thought they'd liquidate. And by the way, I've got another first there. I was willing to authorize a first check for a payment of $1.5 million for food that went to Poland, the first shipment that could be made through the American Relief Administration. In 1918, I think. And they were going to liquidate after that, you know. They thought they were, in fact, I was fourth last of 1,300 workers. But they saw to it that I got a job. And they, the unemployment insurance, Governor Smith was fighting for that, used to come to the labor union to say, I want you to popularize the idea and establish one. Then I can come to the legislature and be damned. Well, I can't do it unless it's done by you people first. So that's when they organized the first unemployment insurance fund among the workers. And I was, I came to Zygmunt, who was president at that time. And that was the one man I would have laid my life down for. The one union leader that I think just outshone them all for honesty and heart. And I came to him and said, of course, he said, but you know, we're going to have difficulty, the employees, you know, that was joint organization between the employers and the unions. The employer contributed half the union there. He says, have you got anybody on the other side? I said, sure I have. I says, Bearwald, who's a banker of leather prayers, you know, who was on the one of the directors of the Joint Distribution Committee, was a friend of Walter B. Wolf, who was made the chairman of the Unemployment Insurance Fund. And he says, can you see him? Would he do anything? I came to them, of course. Immediately called up Arthur B. Wolfman after talk with him, I got the job. So I had that for 3.5 years. At that time, there were some very interesting things happening. By the way, when I was with the Waterproof Garment Workers Union, we went through the war, you know, and as I told you, the cement workers used to use cement, you know, there were two kinds. The helmets, the face masks were made by them. and they weren't drafted. Every time a poor kid used to come crying that he has to support his mother, I transferred from the shop where they sewed into the shop where they used cement to make the cement back. And therefore he wouldn't be drafted. I can tell you many a story. One guy, though, was a little bit late, and he was such a thin little frail thing, you know. He was too late for the application, so however, they drafted him. But they couldn't quite send him away to Europe yet. He was too thin. So he came back, the army fed him up. He came back, I didn't recognize him. Oh, yes, why, he batted me on the head, his protege. When I was in Washington, I used to come there every day and talk to him. He'd sit there in his carpet slippers with a little skull cap, you know, and we'd talk and talk and talk. And he thought I was doing wonderful work there. Oh, I think he was a very brilliant man. He's a pretty old man by that time. I don't think I was able to judge much more. After all, I was a youngster and he was the idol of the workers, you know. I remember one story, though, when he came. He came during a strike in Philadelphia, and he told a story that I never forgot. He had spoken of the cigar workers' strike. He says, you know, he says, in those days, they fed them on beans, and they counted every bean they could afford to give me when beans go super. And he told a story to the strikers, to the waste makers there, that he says, you know, the horses in there know when the wolves are approaching. And even in their wild state, he says, they'll form a ring, put their young on the inside and their heads on the inside, and with their feet kick the enemy to death. He says, we people too form rings, but we put our heads on the outside and kill each other. I never forgot that story. I always used to use that. But it was a story that don't exist.
Probably a good question.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to wear you out.
By the name of Roland D. Mahoney, and had been sent down. Wilson was a classmate of his at Princeton and President, and he was sent down to try and reach settle a strike of these waterproof garment workers. And he used to come by the office and sit and talk. He's an old man, in his 70s. Talk for hours. And he told me the only reason he got into politics, he had been a communist. I asked him one day what in his life he thought was the best thing he did. And he says, well, I was the first insurgent in Congress when they were no such thing as insurgents. He served two terms and then just couldn't take politics anymore. And the reason he got in with the Conciliation Board is because he was a classmate of Wilson's, and Wilson appointed him. And he used to come to the office and sit there and talk to me for half an hour at a time, you know, relating things that had happened. And before he left, though, he made it his business to go to the local where I was having trouble with his clique, you know, tell him that they ought to be happy to have a woman like me in the office. But that didn't stop him, you know. I just kept him being absolutely insulting. That job, got a job at the job, which was very, very, a very good training for me. Some very people that meant something in the commercial world meant a great deal for me financially. I was 14 children. And I have their Lehman letters of recommendation. They all ran to this day. I could open any door with them. I remember I thought I'd take a job to the Madison High School that was being built in Brooklyn after the liquidation of the unemployed insurance fund. And I showed him a letter from Lehman. I had just been taking courses, you know, on my own from the Pratt School in Brooklyn. And he says, oh, as long as Lehman says it's okay with me. And then I refused the job. I'm getting twisted now. That was before the unemployment insurance fund. That was after I left the Waterford Garden. I refused the job because the unemployment insurance fund was being part of it. And I came in as assistant personnel manager. And that's where the Libs would have something to stand on. I had to help out a man who fell down in his work in one office that he organized. I was spending to build it up, and I got $1,000 less. But I succeeded in building up that office. I first helped organize the contribution office. By that time, the unemployment office was a failure. Just setting up those heads to go over there, see what I could do. So Englander, who was the failure, got $1,000 more. But we were all appointees there, you see. And who put you in?
Well, thank you very much.
I don't know what you got there.